Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Football is back this weekend. Hurrah! It's been a while. We haven't had a game since that Sutton United game in the FA Cup. We had a weekend off last weekend, and now it's back. Good old football. Hurrah for football. I like football. Now, whether or not I still like football at 7:30 on Saturday evening remains to be seen. It may be a case that I'm cursing the very person who invented the game. John Pigglesmith, that was his name back in the old 1400s. He decided that he would inflate a pig's bladder and him and his mates would kick it around, see if they could kick it between a couple of sticks. There were no such things as jumpers then, so they couldn't use jumpers for goalposts. People just wore, I don't know what they wore back in the 1400s, armor or sackcloth or some shit like that. Or maybe they just went round in the nip. I don't know. I'm not a historian, am I? Anyway, you can imagine that first game of football, him and his mates running around, kicking the ball here and there, some guy in the background going, "Finger out!" It's just a little joke there, folks. You know, that's all. Don't worry about it. But look, we'll see come this weekend if football can rejuvenate us, if it can revive us, if it can take us out of our funk, if it can infuse us with its hot, life-giving jizz. The football, the jizz of excitement that football gives you is what I'm saying. I hope it can, because we've got a very big game and things at the moment, well, they're a little bit tetchy. You know, we could do with a bit of a pick-me-up, winning at Anfield. That would be a good way of doing that. Might feel slightly better about life and ourselves and the way the team is going, the way football is going, the way everything is going. This is supposed to be our escapism. This is supposed to be the thing that takes us away from the trials and tribulations and horrors of real life. It's supposed to be a thing that distracts us. But at the moment, it becomes a bit all-encompassing. But we shall see. We shall see how it goes. Anyway, I hope you've been well. Of course, we were here with the Arsecast Extra on Monday, and we did the phone-in thing last Friday, which is really quite interesting. I thought it went, you know, well, it could have been perhaps a little bit technologically slicker, but I thought it was quite an interesting little thing to do and very interesting that people called in from all over. And thank you very much indeed for doing that. So what I might do, if I stop and think about it, I will have to stop and think about it a bit, though, is do those maybe a bit more regularly, maybe do one a month, and we might do it as an extra podcast in that week. Maybe in a week where we don't have a midweek game or something like that, we can do one of those phone-in shows, and I'll see if I can get, you know, co-host. We weren't able to keep Andrew on the line, unfortunately, but, you know, I might test it out, and maybe we'll do a bit more of that. So, yeah. That's where we're going. That's where we're going with the whole podcast thing. But anyway, interesting show for you today. Of course, because we are playing Liverpool on Saturday, I will be talking a little bit later on to the Mug Smasher. That's right. He'll be telling me what he thinks of the Mug Smasher season, and we'll chat about, I don't know what, probably football and maybe not football or other stuff, I don't know. But he will be here a little bit later on, and in a few minutes I'll be talking to Jack Pitbrook from The Independent to talk about Arsene Wenger, to talk about the changes at youth level. That's right, this is a week in which nothing much was happening from an Arsenal point of view, and then, bam, bam, out of the blue comes a job offer from Wolfsburg for Andreas Jonker, who is the academy manager at Arsenal, and he said, "Yes, please. I would like to be the new manager of Wolfsburg. Here, Arsenal, take your job and stick it." And so off he went to Germany, to the Bundesliga, but with him went Freddy Ljungberg. That's right, Fredrik Fredensen Fred Ljungberg. he is gone as well. He was coaching the Arsenal under 15s. And he's gone to become one of the assistant managers at Wolfsburg under Andreas Jonker. So some changes at youth level. We'll talk to Jack a bit about that. Arsene Wenger said that they made Freddy promise that he would come back. That's what he said. He said, we gave him permission to go, but with the promise that he'll come back if there's a possibility to come back here. He says, overall, I think it's part of his education to become a coach, to have that kind of experience, and hopefully we can use that later at Arsenal. So there you go. Freddie's gone to develop and, learn the ropes a little more. You can only go so far coaching under 15s, and being the assistant manager at a Bundesliga club is a big opportunity for him. So apart from that, not much else has happened. Mesut Ozil was sick. That's right. He was ill, missing training, so we'll see if he's going to play on Saturday. But he's also, in the very near future, releasing an autobiography, which, I find it a bit odd that players want to release autobiographies when they're still playing. You know, after the fact, when your career is done, I get it. You know, tell the stories, tell the story of your career, you know, stick the knife into a couple of people here and there along the way. But he's releasing it now shortly. It's being serialized in Bild, the German newspaper. And there was a passage released where he talked about a showdown with Jose Mourinho. And this was when Jose Mourinho was manager of Real Madrid and said to him, you think two beautiful passes are enough? You think you're so good that 50% is enough? And Ozil wrote, I'm not even going to try and do an Ozil impression, sorry. Ozil wrote, he pauses, stares at me with his dark brown eyes. I stare back, like two boxers at the stare down before the first round. He shows no emotion, just waits for a response from me. How much I hate him right now. And I love Jose Mourinho, actually. It sounds, with my literary cap on, a little bit like bad erotic fiction. Not sure I want to read this book. For a second, I was right on board with it because, he said he hates Jose Mourinho. I can identify with that. But then he said he loves him, and I really can't identify with that. I can't for me, no. I'll read something else. And apparently Ozil then threw his shirt at Mourinho, who said, oh, you're giving up now? You're such a coward. Funny how Mourinho's voice has changed, I know. But he said, what do you want? To creep under the beautiful warm shower? Shampoo your hair? To be alone? Yes. Bad Erotic Fiction by Mesut Ozil, aged 28 and a half. Anyway, if that book is for you, I believe it's released at the end of March or start of April. So, head down to your local bookstore and get the book from the bookstore, from book shopkeeper. He'll do it. He'll get the book for you and you can read it and stuff. So look, let's get on with the show anyway. And to talk about Arsene Wenger and his situation at the moment, and also, as I mentioned, the situation at the academy level at Arsenal, I'm joined by writer for The Independent, Jack Pitbrook. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks. I want to start by talking about a piece that you wrote during the week. A story that broke on Monday was the fact that Andreas Jonker, who was the academy manager at Arsenal, had been offered the job as manager of Wolfsburg, and he left to take up that role. He brought Freddie Ljungberg, who was coach of the Arsenal under-15s, with him. And you wrote a piece in The Independent, which I thought was interesting, the headline. I know you're not necessarily responsible for the headlines, but it was Arsenal must accept that Andreas Jonker's time at the club as academy manager was a failure. Can you expand on that a little bit? There was a line in there where you said it had been clear for some time that his tenure wasn't working and he didn't have necessarily the capital to truly impose himself on the role. What exactly did you mean by that?
Well, I think he wanted to. The problem is that he came in like any person would in that kind of role with quite grand visions, I think, about changing the direction of the academy. Particularly, he wanted to make it more competitive for young players. He wanted to stop the habit of giving players professional deals as soon as they turn 17, as well as making some technical changes. And I think he found that, it's such a big operation, basically, that it was quite difficult to get everyone pulling in his direction. And he found that not everyone agreed with him, and ultimately, maybe he didn't quite have the kind of institutional power within the academy, where he has to balance like all the coaches, all the players, the parents, the club, and Wenger himself. Mm. It's quite a difficult political job, basically. And while he was a nobody doubts Jonker's like knowledge of the game. He's had a fantastic CV working primarily with Louis van Gaal all over Europe. And people thought that he was like an interesting and engaging guy who knew a lot about football. But I think that kind of job is about relationships and alliances. And I think he never quite, or he struggled to kind of earn enough credit to be able to have the authority to do what he wanted to do there.
Yeah, there was an interesting line. I remember we did a piece not long after he was appointed, and it meant that Terry Burton, who'd been there for many years, was ousted, I guess, and he wasn't particularly happy about it. And he talked in the piece about how he went to Arsene Wenger and said, look, you know, I don't know what's going on. You're bringing in this guy from the outside. You know, I know what's going on here. Maybe you can dismiss that, or, you know, as a guy who's about to lose his job, that's perhaps understandable. But Arsene Wenger said, well, I had nothing to do with it. So can we read something into the fact that this was, to all intents and purposes, not an Arsene Wenger appointment, but perhaps an Ivan Gazidis appointment, that maybe he was always going to find it a little bit difficult to get the authority that you've been talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be fair enough. And I think that, I mean, I know that Jonker himself felt fairly, I think around a point last season, he started to think, hold on a second, maybe I don't have as much of Arsene Wenger's support here as I first thought when I came in. And maybe it's going to be, maybe I won't be able to achieve the things that I initially thought I would be able to do. Like I think Burton and also Liam Brady are important kind of counterexamples, because they've been there for a while and they built up those, the credit, the institutional power, the political power, however you want to, whatever you want to call it. Mm. And then the new guy comes in, and all of a sudden he has to kind of, even though he has been brought in by the chief executive, he still basically has to start from scratch on a personal level. And I think it was those kind of personal relationships that he struggled with the most as he tried to do what he wanted to do there.
I suppose the thing you'd say, though, about youth development is that you don't necessarily see the fruits of the work or what changes might have been made straight away. You know, it's not like coming in and putting a new lick of paint on a wall. You know, there's a long-term project, I guess, you know, for these young players and young players across the academy and all the various teams. I mean, what's the sense of the work that he did from a purely footballing point of view there? I know there's been a big investment in the Hayland facility. I assume Jonker had some input into that as well. But in terms of the way that the teams have performed and the way that players are developing, how's that viewed?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like, you can't... It's very difficult to judge this kind of role, particularly in as small as, like, a time frame as he had, like, just under three seasons. You know, you could say, yeah, well, Hector Bellerin and Alex Iwobi came into the team, and they did, but, you know, they'd already done quite a lot of development before Jonker showed up, and therefore it's not necessarily down to him that they did so well. Therefore, you know, it might be better to look at the lads who are coming through right now or in two or three years' time. So, for example, the results of the development teams were not especially good. That's the 21s, which then became the 23s, obviously. And the 18s, and then the teams in the FA Youth Cup and the European Youth Cup. Now, the results weren't great. Like, they didn't, you know, they didn't win the Youth Cup. They didn't do very much at all in Europe. They're not really challenging towards the top end, the 23s or the 18s. But that's not what youth development is about. Like, it's nice to win things at youth level, but it doesn't necessarily follow that the players that win those trophies will make it into your first team. Like, Chelsea, as we know, are brilliant in the Youth Cup, and yet none of those players have yet really got into the Chelsea team, and it's unlikely that they will in the near future. Like, it's possible that Man City will face the same issue, given they're getting closer and closer in the Youth Cup, which is basically a very long way of saying it's too early to tell. Like, it might well be that some of these lads in a year or two's time, like Jeff Rennie Adelaide is a player who I think he helped to bring in, who does seem to be like a pretty seriously good player, or could be. And yet we kind of, you know, it is a bit of a wait and see job.
Yeah. In terms of a replacement, Arsenal have made an interim replacement. That was their words. Luke Hobbs, who's been doing a lot of the football work at Hayland, is going to take over in the very short term. the question of who is going to replace him in the long term, you know, when you do invest so much in an academy and facilities, you want it to be run as well as it can possibly be run. So you're looking for the absolute best candidate that you can find. Some of the names have been mentioned. Mark Warburton, who was ex-Rangers manager, and a guy from Barcelona, which is a story that you guys ran on the Independent side, called Pep Segura.
Yeah, so that was a story which done by my colleague Miguel Delaney. He saying that Segura, who had worked now is at Barcelona and previously been at Liverpool, is someone that Arsenal had lined up and looked at for the role. I'm not sure exactly where that stands at the moment. You'd have to get Miguel on and ask him. But clearly, like, it's a really big job. But it also speaks to the big issue at Arsenal at the moment, which is, like, this summer, like, people don't know. I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say lots of people in football have no idea who will be in senior roles at Arsenal this summer. And that makes choosing the guy to replace him incredibly hard.
Yeah, I mean, it is a remarkable situation. The air of uncertainty that's permeated throughout the club, it's sort of unprecedented, because you look at the situation with Arsene Wenger. We'll talk about him in a moment, but obviously we don't know yet what's going to happen with him. I think we have an idea what he would like to happen, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But obviously there are contract situations with Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez. There are other players, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Kieran Gibbs, Jack Wilshere, Wojciech Szczesny, who will be back with 1 year left on their contract. There's the academy situation, and Arsenal right now are in a position where they don't know who is going to be making those decisions or when those decisions are going to be made.
I know, yeah. It's really remarkable, actually. I can't think of a situation like it. I mean, even, of course, at Manchester United, they lost Sir Alex Ferguson and David Gill at the same time, coming up to 4 years ago. And that was a big deal. But this would be, I mean, for the reasons, I mean, that United team, there was more stability there, particularly on the playing side now, than there is here at Arsenal. I cannot think of anything remotely comparable. Stan Kroenke, it's not unfair to say that Stan Kroenke is the only person that, you know, will definitely be there.
Hurrah!
And from there, you know, and this is kind of the problem in itself, because this is the situation where what you need more than anything else is, like, a vision, direction, stability, like a clear sense of what the people that matter want. And I think those are the things which Arsenal are most obviously lacking at the moment, from top to bottom.
Yeah, it's something I wrote about actually yesterday on Arsblog, was about how, understandably, there's a lot of focus on Arsene Wenger and his future and his performance and all those kind of things. And you know, we know there are large swathes of Arsenal fans who would like a change this summer. But there does seem to be a lack of direction from the very top of the club, that Stan Kroenke is very much an absentee landlord, and nobody has any real idea what he wants other than a return on his investment. If he even wants that, he's quite happy just to hold on to what he's got. Do you feel in some ways that is playing a part in what's happening at Arsenal, not just at the moment, but perhaps since his purchase of the shares, which made him majority shareholder? There's been no real drive or ambition from board level, and everything has been left pretty much to Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. Like, I do think there is drive and ambition from board level. I think that Ivan Gazidis is a very driven and ambitious person. But I think that I don't know how important to that vision making the first team as good as it possibly can be with the resources it has is, if you know what I mean. And I think that one of the reasons why why the first team has stagnated over the last five to eight years has been that the higher people in the club, from Kroenke down, they're not as kind of driven to throw everything they have at making the first team win as, say, the boards at Manchester City, Chelsea, Manchester United are.
Yeah.
Especially given the fact that Arsenal, of course, now do have, you know, if they wanted to spend the top money on the top players, they could do so.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to to Arsene Wenger, and you were at his press conference yesterday, and he was asked about his future, he was asked about turning down a big money deal from China, which he was not going to be drawn on at all, and said he didn't want to talk about his future. But he said that his intention or his preference has always been Arsenal. So I think we can take the read from this that what he would like more than anything is to continue at Arsenal, but he must also be aware that the ability to be able to do that is going to be predicated on the results that the team has between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, so he said, I mean, I think the key quote is when he said, "I've been here 20 years and I have many times the opportunity to leave, so I don't think I have to convince you that my preference has always been Arsenal. But of course, I am objective and lucid enough to make the right decision for myself and the club as well." Mm. By which he means, of course I want to stay, but I'm not so blind to the fact that it might not be the right decision, and I won't absolutely refuse to leave at all costs. Now, I think what's interesting is to think through under what circumstance, if he's saying that he could be persuaded to leave, under which circumstances could he actually leave? I think it's clearly it'll be tied to results and the fact that if they win the cup and come second, he will get to stay, I think, if he wants. If they go out in the semi-finals and come fifth, I think it'll be very difficult. But I don't think I find it difficult to envisage that even if the season ends badly, that Gazidis and Kroenke will ask Wenger not to sign. I think it will more come from Wenger himself. I think he will, as much as he loves the club, and I think almost even more importantly than his love for Arsenal is his love of being a manager.
Yeah.
Like, he loves being a manager. He thinks it's the ultimate fulfillment of his life, or it's the best way to live a good life as a person, is to be a manager. And therefore, I think if he does leave, it would be because he thinks it would be politically impossible for him to stay. Like, he's quite thick-skinned, Wenger. He's had to become that. But I don't think he would want to be as unpopular as he would be if he stayed on after a bad end to the season.
Sure. Sure. But I mean, do you get the sense that from an Arsenal point of view, that when you talk about Kroenke and when you talk about Gazidis, that they would perhaps be willing to, how will I put this? Because to me, it often feels a little bit like Wenger is the lightning rod for all the things that are wrong at the club, and clearly there are criticisms that you can make of him and his teams and performances in big games. I think we all know that, but it would be relatively easy for Gazidis and Kroenke to light the Wenger touch paper for another couple of years and then sit back and watch him take all that flack again. So do you feel like that's something that they're considering, or is there in any conversation that you might have had with anyone a sense that there's a contingency plan should things not go the rest of the season the way that they might?
Yeah, I mean, there are these names that we keep hearing, which sound quite plausible as the kind of backup shortlist, which are Allegri, Tuchel, Jardim. But I think your point about the lightning rod is absolutely right. Like, if you ask anyone who runs this club, obviously it's Arsene Wenger. If Arsene Wenger goes and is replaced by Tuchel or Jardim or whoever, it would, like, and then things start to go wrong next season, I don't think people would say, Jardim, Tuchel, isn't he useless? This would come back on Kroenke and Gazidis, because they've been here for much longer than the new coach, whoever that might be.
Mm.
And they were the guys who, appointed him in a rush over the summer, speaking hypothetically, without necessarily having the kind of infrastructures in place, such as a director of football, to make the transition easier. So I do think that if Wenger goes and they get a new guy and things don't go so well next year, then all the shit that would inevitably be created by this would be landing on the heads of the senior people at the club, not on the head of the new coach.
Mm. Well, yeah, again, it's a hypothetical and obviously dependent on what happens between now and the end of the season. A lot of big games for Arsenal and, still to play both Manchester clubs, Tottenham Hotspur away as well, and then Liverpool away on Saturday. Just very briefly touching on that game, in some ways you might say it looks like a good time to play Liverpool because their form is so abject. They've only won two in their last 12 games. But seasoned Arsenal watchers will know that we have this this ability to inspire and rejuvenate and reignite the season and form of other teams, which is a bit of a worry. Which manager do you think is going to be most worried about this game?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I think that, I mean, you probably have to make Arsenal favourites based on the fact that Liverpool are playing even worse than Arsenal at the moment. Although you always want... And cause, I mean, Liverpool against Leicester was abysmal. Liverpool have, like, I mean, what's the best way of putting this? I think that the danger is that Arsenal might not play in. I mean, there's a way of playing against Liverpool. The question is whether Arsenal will play that way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Will Arsenal make things difficult for Liverpool, like Leicester did the other day, or will they play a game which would leave them open to exploitation by Liverpool with the pace they have? Although that said, if Jordan Henderson isn't fit, that completely changes how Liverpool play, because Henderson isn't a particularly quick player, but he does kind of set the tempo for Liverpool in midfield. Mm. And when he's not there, their build-up is so slow that it makes them hard. I mean, they can't be as effective on the counter-attack as they can be when Henderson is playing. A lot hinges based on how Arsenal approach the game and whether or not they try and think about it cleverly or whether they just go and play their natural game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult to know. I mean, it really is so hard to tell when both teams are struggling for form and confidence and belief. Anything could happen. Just one final question on Mesut Ozil. He's been ill this week. Apparently he's been off training a little bit ill. Is that in some ways a little bit of a get out for Arsene Wenger if he decides not to play him in a big game away from home? Where do you stand on that whole thing? Because in some ways I feel like he's singled out for his lack of performance in big away games, a little unfairly at times, because he's no worse generally than anyone else in the team, and I think it's more a collective effort that's lacking when Arsenal don't perform in these big games. But he maybe stands out a bit more because he is the record signing and he is a guy who you would like to see perhaps really impose himself on a game and be the creative force for Arsenal to help change this away record, which is really, really quite poor.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like a lot of people, I've always been a huge Ozil defender. Like, he's an amazing player to watch, and I love watching him. And I do think that he's one of those players who gets unfair criticism because of his style of play. Like, I'm not sure he wants to win less than a player whose style is to run around more. Mm. But it just looks that way. All that said, there has clearly been, like, he has clearly been much worse in the last, like, I don't know, since about November.
Yeah.
Than he was in the first half of the season when he was really good. And I think that, you know, there was a point not very long ago where I might have thought that out of Ozil and Sanchez, you'd want to keep Ozil and maybe sell Sanchez. But now I think the opposite is true. I think Ozil's kind of focus seems to have dissipated so badly. Mm. Whether or not he can do it at Liverpool on Saturday, I mean, you'd have to suggest that the evidence the last 2 months is that he probably won't. Like, there's not much... You'd be more surprised if he turned out a brilliant performance out of nowhere than if he did what he did at Stamford Bridge, which was poor.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I'm not exactly filled with confidence on that one.
All right. Well, look, we'll see how it goes. Jack, thanks a million for your time. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much indeed to Jack. You can find him on Twitter at Jack Pitt Brook. That is at Jack Pitt Brook. And you can read his stuff in The Independent as well. Right, we're going to take a very quick break. We're going to be back with a competition for you video gamers out there. Well, some of you, unfortunately, not all of you. But that's just the way it goes in terms of the prize we've got to give away. And we'll be chatting with the Mug Smasher 2 right after this.
King. King. It's only game. Meds. Meds. Games. Meds. Games. Meds. Game. Meds. Game. Meds. Game. It's only game. It's only game. Why you have to be mad? Mad. 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 Mad.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back. Now, time for a little competition for those of you who like football video games. This is right up your street. Unfortunately, it's only for people with PlayStation 4s or PlayStations 4, which is the plural of that. PlayStation 4s is. Anyway, if you have a PS4, this competition is for you. For the rest of you who might have an Xbox or a Nintendo Wii or a Sega Dreamcast or a ZX Spectrum or an Auric 1, whatever it might be, unfortunately, this game won't be available to you, so there's no point entering the competition. If you're of a particular age or vintage, you might remember a game on the Amiga and also the Atari ST called Kickoff. Well, this is a regenerated, revived version of that game, of that classic, and as the bump goes, it's a game that requires old-school skill levels and time investment to truly master the controls. It's a limited edition version of the game which comes with a t-shirt that's too small for normal men. So, if you're smaller than a normal man, this could be just the prize for you. But what we've got is a limited edition version of the game, and all you have to do is email competition@arsblog.com. That's competition@arsblog.com, and a winner will be picked at random and announced on next week's show. You can get this game in all good video game stores. You can also get it as a digital download from the PS Store. It's called Kickoff, and I'm telling you, the thing that makes this game absolutely great is that on the advertising hoardings around the pitch in the game, Arsblog is on one of the advertising hoardings, or pops up now and again, along with our podcast buddies at Retro Asylum. And if you like video games, if you like old video games, retro video games, and you're looking for a podcast that gives you everything you need when it comes to retro video games, Retro Asylum is exactly what you're looking for. Follow them on Twitter at RetroAsylum1, or search Retro Asylum in iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Download and listen to all the great episodes that they have on there. It's a really fantastic podcast about video games, if that's your bag. So there you go. That will be something we'll announce on next week's show. And sorry again to the rest of you who don't get a prize to enter because you don't have a PSS4. But, you know, you could easily solve this during the week by going out and spending hundreds of pounds on a PlayStation 4. So this competition is worth entering. Probably not the wisest use of money that there ever was, unless you were already planning to get a PS4. I don't know if you were or not. I'm not a soothsayer. I can't see into the future. What I can see, though, is the Mug Smasher. He's here to talk about this weekend's big game between Arsenal and Liverpool. Good evening to you.
Hello there.
How was your climbing?
My climbing?
Mm.
I'm really bad at it.
It is like an indoor wall.
It's an indoor wall, and everybody's younger than me and stronger than me. Makes me feel pretty fucking great.
And like, is there any danger of hurting yourself?
No, when you're standing on the ground, no. But when you're like 6 foot or 10 foot up, it feels like you're going to plummet to your death. But I mean, all you're going to fall on is a mat,
a giant mat.
Yeah, but it's kind of fun.
Is this? Are you learning to climb? You know, just in case we have to go live in the trees at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. No. In case I need to run away from all of the people.
Mm. Yeah. I remember you were not very good at... Well, you used to be good at climbing.
I was also good at falling.
You were really good at falling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one time you fell out completely out of a tree a long way down.
I remember that.
Yeah. And actually, for once, you didn't break anything.
No.
Which is amazing, considering how much you broke as a kid.
It still doesn't make sense. I should have broken something, but... Hey-ho. Yeah.
Oh, well, it didn't break your spirit anyway.
No, back up the tree.
Yeah, all right. Well, look, the last time we spoke was... Jesus, it was August. Well, not the last time we spoke to each other, but the last time we spoke on the podcast was back in August, ahead of the opening day of the season. Liverpool were visiting the Emirates to play a well-prepared, ready for the new season Arsenal, and took advantage of that.
Yeah. What, that was a 4-3 win?
4-3 win, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember much about the game, I'll be completely honest, other than the fact that we won. But 4-3 makes it sound like, oh, did we go miles ahead?
And you, yeah.
Yeah, you clawed a couple of back.
Yeah, we went ahead. I think we scored first. Walcott missed a penalty, and then we scored first, and then you score. You were 4-1 up at one stage.
Yeah. And then our defending took over.
Yeah, in some ways, was that like... not necessarily a microcosm of your season, but of what it was going to be, in the sense that at times you look really threatening and dangerous in attack, but still capable of letting in lots of goals?
Yeah, it was just a continuation of last season's form. Whereas last season we'd win a couple and lose a couple, this season we managed to win tons for a while, but now we are...
Yeah, it's gone.
As flaky as Arsenal.
Yeah, it's gone a bit wrong, hasn't it? It's like...
Yeah.
Whatever happened from the turn of the new year...
Well, we missed Mane, clearly, but we've missed Henderson when he's not in the team as well. Yeah. And we don't have a striker.
That is the mad thing, isn't it?
I mean, I think Firmino is excellent. And he scored a ton of goals and he contributes a lot to the play. But in games like the one on Monday night where things aren't working, a real centre forward makes a difference.
Should never have let Benteke go.
Where is he now? Palace?
Crystal Palace, yeah.
Oh, well, you can't really judge them. They're having a nightmare, aren't they?
Mm. Well, yeah. I mean, every day must be a nightmare when you wake up and realise that Sam Allardyce is on top of you. From a footballing...
Oh, staring into your eyes.
Yeah.
Big dribbling.
Oh, my God. Yes, the freshly chewed cud there on the pillow beside you.
Delicious.
Mm. But, yeah, that is a mad thing, isn't it, that you don't necessarily have a centre-forward. Well, you've Daniel Sturridge, but what's happening with that man?
Well, I mean, when he comes on, we look disjointed. He doesn't seem to... He doesn't fit the style of play. It's really obvious. He comes too deep. He takes too much pace out of the ball. We don't function properly. But then, having said that, again, in games like Monday night and the other games we've lost to lesser teams this season, we weren't working as a team anyway.
Yeah.
So
if you double don't work, as I think maybe that if you're not working as a team, putting on somebody who makes you not work as a team, it could be like a double negative and make it a positive.
Not exactly, although right. That sounds convincing. Just you may as well, because nothing else is working.
So sure.
Put on someone who can score goals, and he can score a goal out of nothing when he wants to. But I won't be upset if he leaves in the summer. I don't think anyone will. He's too flaky.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to keep him either. He doesn't ever seem to have convinced Klopp.
No.
In his way. How's your view on Klopp?
I still like him. We're still making progress.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose we need to... He occasionally looks bewildered on the sideline, you know, when the team just don't perform. And I think he could probably... be a bit more proactive in that situation, but I don't know. It's easy to say that sitting on a couch.
Yeah. You should make a scary face at them more, because I would play really well if I knew that he was going to make his scary face at me.
If he unhooked his jaw.
Yeah, did the yeah, I'm going to consume your head.
Yeah.
In one bite.
I like him though.
Yeah.
He's still good. We're still making progress. Mm. We've played some brilliant football. We still can't defend.
Mm. That is a big problem.
Yeah, it's terrible. But you could argue that we've been more consistent this season, and yeah, we're higher up the table. We've got more points, I presume. And so it's progress.
And you would assume that this kind of run, you know, based on what happened in the first half of the season, that the run that you're on at the moment has got to come to an end. You've got to find a bit more consistency in earning points.
Yeah, but I thought we'd come to that. I thought we'd got out of that cycle, and then Leicester decided they wanted to play football for the first time this season.
Yeah, wasn't that good of them to just turn up and like try?
Yeah.
What fucking bastards.
Yeah, it's very, very hard to like any of them at this stage. I mean, it was hard enough as it was, but that they just seem like fucking horrible pricks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it almost felt inevitable, didn't it, what happened in the game on Monday night after they'd sort of gone some way to shafting Ranieri to then just turn up and be 200%, 300% more into playing.
Yeah, I said it to you on Sunday as we had a pint.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll lose to these. Mm. Fuck them. So I still hope they get relegated.
Yeah, I don't think they will, but I would enjoy that. I would enjoy that as well.
I think lots of people would.
Yeah. What about the fact that, you know, when you do lose games, they tend to be against the so-called lesser lights, and that your record against the big teams is pretty good, and Arsenal's away record against the big teams is not so great. Does that give you confidence going into Saturday?
Yeah, it does now. I wasn't aware of your away record.
I
knew we'd been good against the top six and brutal against everyone else. But this is a team, or this is a game, that it's just impossible to call.
Mm.
It's who can fuck up the less, or the least, I think. There's going to be goals for sure.
Yeah.
And some really hapless defending on both sides.
Yes. I think we're both capable of that.
Yeah. So it's impossible to call, really. A couple of months ago, I would have said Liverpool at home, we're going to win.
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe it's a game that will suit us, because Arsenal aren't really going to sit back.
That's the thing, isn't it? Where I was just talking to earlier in the podcast to Jack Pitbrook from The Independent, who was saying it would really depend if Arsenal can play the kind of game that would nullify Liverpool, then you'd fancy their chances. But if they go to Anfield and try and play the normal game where they try and get on top of it, then it might just play into Liverpool's hands a bit. So I don't know how adaptable we are, or how adaptable the manager is going to be.
I think in the last couple of seasons, you've shown more of an appetite for stifling teams, and you've done it to good effect sometimes.
Mm. Yeah, there's one or two games. Certainly there's one against Manchester City, which really sticks out. But I do wonder how much of that was a plan, and how much of it was just like, oh, fuck, we're being battered here, and we've got to sit back and defend, you know? So
maybe, How are you feeling about everything?
I feel it's really weird and uncertain. There's so much going on around the club that nobody has any clue as to what's going to happen in the summer. You know, you've got Alexis and Ozil, who are heading towards the last 12 months of their contract. You've got other players as well, like Wilshere and Oxlade-Chamberlain, a few others who are also heading into that thing. Nobody knows yet who is going to be the manager next season. It's so dependent on the results. It's just really weird that so much depends on what happens between now and the season, and even from game to game. People's mood is going to be hugely affected by every result. So if we win against Liverpool at Anfield, that'll be fine for a couple of days. But the next time we lose, it's just going to be a complete shitstorm again.
Yeah.
You know?
People are incapable of being rational at this stage.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is that. There is that, but it's just sort of a rolling stone that's gathered a lot of moss and shit along the way, that the weight of the desire for change and stuff like that is just growing all the time. You know, so if Arsene Wenger finishes second and wins the FA Cup, then he's got a good a good case to sign a new deal.
That would be total insanity on his part, on the club's part.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask you. But, you know, if they finish outside the top four and don't win a trophy, then I don't think there's any way that he can stay. So, I mean, looking at it from your point of view, what do you think about the whole Wenger situation?
He should walk away. Because it seems like the club will never fire him.
Mm.
He should walk away. Because it's the same thing every season. Nothing that's happened this season is surprising to anyone, except maybe him.
Yeah.
I
don't think it's even surprising to him.
No.
It can't be, can it?
No. And I don't think he's finished as a manager. He's just finished at Arsenal.
Mm.
Nothing is going to change. So he should walk away. And then, I don't know, people argue that second in the league and Champions League every season is success. And it's far more successful than most other clubs in the English Football League.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, you can't deal with the kind of shitstorm that goes on every time someone misplaces a pass or you lose a game. I just walk away.
Yeah.
Fucking goes in the beach for a while.
Yeah, I don't think he can, though. That's the thing. He's just so wedded to being football manager. That's all he wants to do and all he wants to be. And I think I think his desire is to stay at Arsenal for another couple of seasons. But it just entirely depends on what happens between now and the end of the season. But even then, it won't change the minds of people who, when it comes to, let's say, next season and you lose a game or you lose a couple of games or, you know, you're in the title race and then all of a sudden, you know, within the space, as is what happened this season, Arsenal were in the title race and then within a week or 2 weeks, the results were so bad that they were then more or less out of it.
Yeah.
You know, that your season can flip like that and people just, I don't think, have the appetite for another one of those adventures.
Yeah. It's shit. Liverpool had the same thing in the space of 2 weeks, out of two cups and out of the league.
Yeah.
Again, it's the same shit every year, and it takes a lot for me to get kind of excited by Liverpool these days after years and years of you know, things going wrong. And I resisted for a long time this season, but we went top of the league. I can't remember who we beat, but we gave them an absolute spanking to go top of the league.
Oh, I remember the game, all right, yeah.
Might have been Southampton, might have been Everton. I can't remember.
Yeah, I remember that.
Then I thought, oh, Jesus, this might be it. Because we were beating the smaller teams as well, beating the teams that we would traditionally stumble against. And then as soon as you start to believe that, just fucking...
they fuck you wrong. Up.
Yeah. It's it's a lesson we never learn.
No, that's football, I guess.
Yeah,
that is football. Can you see beyond Chelsea for the title?
No. Earlier in the season, I was convinced that they couldn't maintain this. That it was an amazing run, but it was sort of as good as they could get, and they'd start to wane. But they haven't really wobbled at all.
No, I mean they had their little blip at the start of the season, almost.
They had a couple of draws recently, but
yeah.
No, I don't see anyone stopping them.
Mm. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
This could be worse.
There's always next year with the same...
The same old shit. Our seasons end in February.
Yeah. okay, well, look, the traditional not wishing you good luck, what have you, for... you have to predict an Arsenal win or a Liverpool, you know, that's how it works.
Oh, yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that.
Yeah, I think there'll be six goals in the game, though.
Six goals in the game?
Yeah.
I might put a fiver on that. Wonder what the odds are for that. Six goals. Six goals above. Let's just do it, will we?
I'm almost constantly wrong about these things.
Well, that's fine, but like just on the off chance that for once you're right.
Put your house on it.
Put your house on it. Let's see what we get here. Betfair... Liverpool versus Arsenal. Okay, over, under. See, I don't get this. What's 5.5 goals? What's that?
Over 5.5 goals is 6 goals.
Right. Why wouldn't they just say over 5 goals, though? Because over 5 goals is also 6 goals.
But then you don't have over, under. because it'd be over five goals and under five goals, and then you couldn't bet on the five goal market. So there you go.
Right.
There's your answer.
I still don't get it, but
what's not to get?
The fact that, like, if it's over
five goals, you're betting on six or more. If it's under five goals,
you're betting on four
or more. But there's a whole market there that the betting companies can't rip us off on. There's the five goal market. Who's going to bet on that?
I don't know.
They're losing money.
But is that not the under six goals or above four goals market?
Yeah, probably is.
I don't know. But there's probably a reason.
I'm no doctor.
Anyway, it says five and a half. That's what we're going for, the 5.5 goals on.
10-1.
10-1. That's not very good. Why I would have thought that would have been like quite a lot higher. But maybe they know that it's Arsenal versus Liverpool and it's two teams that can't defend.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Get your house on it.
Yeah. It's not worth it. You'd have to put like lots of money on that to win any real money. I'll stick a fiver on it. We'll see what happens.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you.
Good day.
Right. Well, thank you very much indeed to the Mug Smasher. Let's hope that he is a sad, sad Mug Smasher come 7:30 thereabouts on Saturday evening, because it is a 5:30 kickoff. Boo. I don't like 5:30 kickoffs, but there you go. What can we do? TV schedules are not made by us or made with us in mind in any way, as we saw this week when Sky and BT announced all the fixtures. We're playing away at Middlesbrough on a Monday night and two Monday night fixtures in a row and a North London derby at 4:30. But anyway, that's stuff we can worry about in the weeks ahead. This game tomorrow at Anfield, if it's not quite must win, even though I think a win is going to be absolutely vital, it's most certainly a do not lose kind of a game. You think back what happened there last season when we were 3-2 up with just injury time to go and Joe Allen scored a late equaliser for Liverpool. And I really feel like that goal played a major part in our title challenge falling apart. You know, instead of coming back from Anfield full of confidence and belief, having gone behind a couple of times and come behind to win the game, we end up drawing, we end up losing in really heartbreaking circumstances, because when you lose and drop, or when you drop points rather, that late in the game, it's so demoralizing. And after that Liverpool game, we won just two of our next eight Premier League games. And I really do feel like if we'd won that night at Liverpool, if we'd won at Anfield that night and taken 3 points, we were top of the table. We were top of the table. And that weekend allowed Leicester to draw level on points with us, because we only had a point and they beat Tottenham away from home, a very late goal, I think, from Robert Huth. I think if we'd won that game last season, might just have been different. Maybe it's a bit of wishful thinking on my part, but I can't think back to that game and not think that it had just a massive effect on the team's belief. And given what's happened in Munich recently, given what's happened at Chelsea, and Arsene Wenger even admitting at his press conference on Thursday that the away record is a bit of a problem, it doesn't help, he said. They've got to be strong enough to deal with it. And while the criticism is very much focused on the manager, I think there ought to be some on these players as well. You know, they're better than they've shown in recent weeks, and maybe it's all to do with Arsene Wenger, but I think as well they can't be absolved of the blame. Too many players have been below par, far from their best, and we need them to be back at their best going into this final stretch of the season. So it's up to the manager to get that out of them, but it's also up to them to perform when they get on the pitch. And I really hope they can do that against Liverpool on Saturday, because, you know, if we don't win, it raises just more and more questions about our ability to cope with these games away from home. We don't quite know what team he's going to pick. Mesut Ozil being ill might mean that he won't risk him if he's not 100%. Will he take him, put him on the bench? You know, we'll have to wait and see. And I do think, as I said earlier to Jack, that the away games are much more of a collective effort than like one guy not driving the game on. But it would be brilliant to see Mesut Ozil really take a grip on a game, especially away from home, and be the decisive force in it. But, you know, there's plenty of attacking options. We've got Giroud back in the squad. Alexis Sanchez is there. Theo Walcott, Lucas Perez, Danny Welbeck. You know, these guys are there. We've got firepower. It's whether we can work what happens behind them to the point where that firepower becomes effective. And I do think finding a right balance in midfield is a challenge still. It's not something the manager has figured out yet this season to a large extent, certainly not since the departure of Sandy Cazorla. And until such time as we do get a functioning midfield, I think the rest of it is always going to be a little bit higgledy-piggledy. But look, I'm going to leave it there. James and I will be here on Monday. We'll be discussing everything that happened at Anfield tomorrow night. Fingers crossed it's a win. Fingers crossed we have a good result. And, of course, we've got a big, big game against Bayern Munich next week to try and restore some pride, if not qualify, in the Champions League. So, look, have a great weekend. I'll catch you on Monday with James. Until the next one, cheers. Bye-bye. I remember my first encounter with him like it was yesterday. He stood there, his muscles bunched beneath his white, tight t-shirt. I felt like a stag must feel when it's feeling at its most stagly, stagging around in a field. I stared. I couldn't keep my eyes off him, but he didn't notice me at first. I could see the sweat glistening on his brow. Eventually, he caught my eye. My heart almost stopped as he began to speak. Those words still echo in my brain now.
All right, mate, what can I get you then?
Six buffalo wings and a large fry.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Eyes, I said. It was going to be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.